Good afternoon and welcome to ArtSpeak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd with you here every Wednesday, noon to 1 o'clock, and it's all about the arts, the culture, the music, the performance, everything that's happening in Kansas City, plus literary, because there's so much going on. Thank you so much for making us a priority on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And I want to thank my radio husband, Mark Manning, for making me sick.
What?
We're just kind of passing the germs around here, so bear with me. I don't have that smoky, sexy voice you're used to. But anyway, thank you for tuning in. Today we've got Boy Boy on the show. He's an installation artist. He's a fiber artist, sculptor. He's into fashion, just everything you want to know. He's right here in the studio today. Also, we have a beautiful jazz duo, Alamode, here in the studio who's going to perform live. And that would be Jessica Powell and Clayton DeLong. And then we also have an American poet and educator at the Kansas City Art Institute, Jordan Stempelman. And last, we have our wonderful Ben Payton, who is a KKFI volunteer. And he's going to talk to us about the importance of social media. There, now I can hear myself. Excellent. So let's get started. Boy is a Kansas City native who got their start in the Kansas City art community while working with MyArts, the Metropolitan Youth Art and Technology for Students. He recently graduated from the Kansas City Art Institute Fiber Program and are currently a Charlotte Street Foundation studio resident. Their work tends to address issues related to dissociation, idealization, and identity in a playful, oversaturated, and overstylized manner. Often their installations reference their Catholic upbringing as well as nostalgia for an alternative reality, and they are heavily influenced by film, set design, and narrative structure, which is seen in the orchestration of a space and the consideration as to how the audience will interact with the installation. Now, since graduating, they have worked on installations for J. Ashley Miller's Ecosis Opera, Electrosexual Halloween, and the Kemper Gala After Party, to name a few. Now, you can find them every Saturday at Peggy Nolan's shop on West 18th Street. So I want to say welcome, my friend Boy.
Hi, how are you?
Terrific. This is real exciting because when I first met you, when I first knew about you, I had attended the Charlotte Street Foundation, the 2016 Charlotte Street Foundation, kind of a pachakacha in a sense, and so I got to have you on the show.
Yeah.
So let's talk about everything that you do. What are you working on currently?
Well, right now, I'm kind of taking a step back. I've had a lot of shows and installations. I've been busy the last few months, so I'm slowly trying to step back and just balance it out and work more in studio and kind of have that alone time and more like research based and more kind of meditative studio practice before I like go back and start doing more shows and stuff like that.
Well, I can say that I absolutely love the film, the video that I watched, Hole.
Yes.
And when did you
that was my senior thesis show, which was April 23rd.
So you're just brand new right out of the Institute. Yeah. So
fresh.
Yeah. What do you think about having just recently graduated and now do you have the same sort of momentum? Do you expect that momentum will carry you for some time?
I think I like force myself to be in those situations where it's it is a difficult thing to navigate because your rationale between why you're making something is completely different where it's and that was something I started working on when I was in school where it was like some of the assignments or projects where it's like I studied fibers but that's not majority of what I do, but I enjoyed learning the techniques and learning this, but realized that I needed to be more self-motivated and like I needed very specific research and to delve into things that I wasn't like weren't a part of my studio or the fibers program therefore seeking it out. So I think the biggest transition is how much self-motivation versus external motivation and trying to find a balance even outside of it. And for me, a lot of my rationale between like being productive is like setting myself up for situations where I'm held accountable. So it's like doing a lot of shows and being like, yeah, I'll do installation for this or in that type of thing. So because it's a lot harder to like sit in studio and make something that's going to sit in studio. But if you're like, oh, but this has to be here by Saturday and installed, then
see, and I get that. I get that. I just want to just ask you a bit about fiber. Mm-hmm. When you were there, was it surface design and weaving and all that? I know it's kind of shifted, too, because it's more sculptural and three-dimensional.
I love the fiber program. I think it's actually, it is a very technical department, but it's also very interdisciplinary, where there's people doing film, and there's people that are just kind of playing around, and it's but you're also learning this like lineage of techniques where it's like either dyeing or knitting or weaving, and kind of these technical processes, because I was originally going to go into painting, but I also wanted, like, I'm never going to have access to, like, a room full of looms and to a dye kitchen to, like, learn these processes.
Yeah. It's almost like ceramics. It's like, okay, I don't have a kiln, but,
Now I'm in a, but the other part of it is, like, now I'm getting back into doing fiber stuff, because now I have the time to do it, because it's also a very time-consuming medium, where it's, like, it'll take 30 plus hours to do like a weaving that you want to do, or like a tapestry or a latch So now I'm in a place where it's like I have more time to kind of sit back, and there's not like a fast turnaround, so I can kind of delve into those longer process pieces.
When I ran into you at La Esquina a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about the after party for the camper. Mm. And so let's talk about that. What did you create? What was that?
So I worked with Leon Reeves to do, because there's always like the huge Kemper Gala, which for a lot of younger artists or like artists that are currently working can't afford tickets. So it was a good way to kind of have people that go and support the Kemper and support that the museum and that community, but then also have them be in a situation where they can meet and kind of hang out with younger local artists or people that are working in the art community that aren't at the financial level. And it was really great. It was really fun. It was a great turnout, and it was a very surprising mix of people too, which is always fun. And why I like doing events and kind of installations for parties is because if you're seeing the same people all the time, then you're not growing, you're not learning. And so if you can set up a situation where it's like a diverse group of people or people that don't always get together, it's a lot more satisfying to kind of have those fun conversations.
And then, of course, there's always the performance aspect of that, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And the boy persona that I've been working on for the last few years is a part of, like, many different personas that I have that kind of go into my studio practice and color theory and a whole, like, complex conversation into that.
Yeah.
But the ideal, or, like, setting myself up to, and now I'm at a point where I have to kind of reanalyze it, but it's, like, in a nice way. I never know how to, like, verbalize it correctly because it makes me sound relatively pretentious, but boy, was this, like, narcissistic sociopath, but it's, like, but in a good way. But, like, they're not trying to, like, be mean, but it's very self-fulfilling and kind of idealizing themselves and then kind of creating this party persona based off of that and kind of how that interacts with the audience.
Yeah.
And then there's other sides to my personality or persona that kind of function in different ways.
And I love that, because I think with that persona, with that alter ego, in a sense, you can get away with stuff that you couldn't do maybe in your as your real self.
Yeah, your you know? Kind of your rationale for decision making. it was based on a conversation I had with a close friend of mine about kind of personalities and persona, and so I've kind of taken that and then developed it, and it's been like a part of my studio practice where it's like creating different personas or personalities that have different moral or ethical or like lineage stories, and then being able to kind of have, especially like when working in studio and you're not having those like constant conversations with people, so setting up a scenario where people, different personas can come at a project from different angles and can have like this, their own critique while working on a piece. It's been satisfying.
Do you ever sleep?
No, not well.
I get that from you, because you're always sort of thinking and all that. And again, having looked at your website, which is, you could share it with our
boyboy.com.
Yeah. You know, again, there's installation and film and fashion and all of that, so much about you that people can learn. But there's also the videos that I watch that made me think that's a lot of work. I mean, you know, you've got the lighting and the direction and the story, and it's just
it's really beautiful. It's the fun part, because you fall into, like, a rabbit hole where, like, working on Boy Boy's Hole, which was my senior thesis, was, like, a lot of research based on the club kid community in New York in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah,
mixed
you
with,
got
like,
that. Yeah.
Queer cinema, and then there was, like, an in-depth research into coming-of-age high school, like, movies, which was like a 200-long list of movies, and then doing critical analysis into like what type of movie they are, their narrative structure, and their role, and then looking at their set design. So then the whole point of Hole was to kind of create this propaganda for this event, and to have the audience come in, and then it was based off of like a lot of different personal things, but then orchestrating it, how the audience will interact with it and kind of play into that propaganda, and realizing that like maybe one person will get to that like perfect moment where they understand 50% of what I'm trying to talk about, and that's like completely content. There's different ways where you can interact with it, which is why I like doing events and stuff like that, because you play on, especially as an artist, where it's like if somebody goes into a gallery scene and an artist has worked 100+ hours on a piece, but they only give it a certain amount of time, where it's like setting up an event and kind of tricking your audience into like, this is a party, but then also look at all my work, or like, and kind of, you have more of a durational control of how the audience interacts with an installation or a piece.
I love that.
And it can also change over time throughout the event.
Well, and I think, you know, visually, if you jolt people, it sort of sticks in their mind. Oh, yes, you met him. I know who he is. But I want to talk about the research that you do, because it seems like a very important part of your work. So you the idea is planted, and then you go about the research, and how long does that take you? Or of course, I guess it depends on what your goal is, but it sounds like it's pretty in-depth if you're looking at, you know, historical and, you know, cultural references in that.
I think the other thing that's kind of tricky, or a lot of people don't think about, but it's like, especially like being a studio artist, like research and thinking in your studio practice, it's not like a linear step. It's like it's very like all over the place, where it's like we'll be doing research, or it's like at work listening to podcasts, kind of doing, or listening to audiobooks is a lot of what I do. And kind of doing research while I'm doing other things, and then it will come into play like 6 months later when I'm thinking about this, or it's kind of, it's also a buildup of a vocabulary where you can have these reference points, and knowing that there's a particular reason why like that yellow light is right there and what that means to this, and kind of looking at it very specifically. But I don't actively think about like I'm gonna sit down and research. I sometimes do, but it's more of just like I like information and like the accumulation of it, and trying to process it, and then trying to organize that, and then seeing how it unfolds.
I like that. So with this video, and there, I'm sure there are others that, that folks can view?
I don't have that many videos up online. I have a few, and I'm working on a few right now, but they're kind of smaller projects. I kind of took a step back from video for a little bit, and I've been doing more live performances. Me and my fiance, Sheila Ray, have a performance art duo called Awful, spelled OFL, because that's how I spelled it on our second grade spelling test. Still can't spell, but so we've been doing a lot more live performances and some video pieces, and we're starting to try and get back into video and kind of looking at more narrative structure. And now that I've kind of reversed it, where it's like, how can narrative structure play out in a real space, and then how can I take that narrative structure that functions in a real space or an installation and then use it for a video versus the other way around?
Upcoming projects? Again, you are the 2016 Short Street Foundation recipient. Congratulations.
Thank you. Nothing as of right now. Because I kind of took a step back, and I've kind of been enjoying like being able to just like sit in the studio for hours and kind of meditate and do more research. Eventually, there's going to be a Hole 2, which I'm kind of working on, and I want it to be more collaborative and kind of working with other artists that want to do installation or don't have don't have the space or don't have this type of thing, where it's like it's hard to kind of orchestrate that. So if it's a group show that is a conversation between multiple artists on like setting it up as an event or a party and then working through that, it kind of gives a new challenge to artists that don't have like want to do installation but don't have, like, I don't know, like, the reason behind it. I don't know how to verbalize it yet, but
Yeah, but collaborations and partnerships are great. Yeah. So there's
it's one of those things where it's like it's a really fun like kind of passion project where it's like I have this cool idea and I just like it doesn't necessarily fit into like what I'm doing in my normal studio practice, but I really just want to build this crazy thing, and that's like a really fun and satisfying thing.
I love that.
To do.
I love that. Well, will you please come back? Will you promise
yes,
to come
course.
Back and keep us posted on upcoming projects and video performances, you know, come back.
Will do.
Please
Thank
do.
You.
Very good. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio right after this. You're tuned in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. A little bit under the weather, but feeling better because I've got some great guests in the studio, as always. Next up, I have Ala Mode, who is an authentic jazz band that built upon Kansas City's rich heritage of swing and blues. And though it's been a few years since the Giants have ruled the scene, they say, Charlie Parker and Count Basie and Coleman Hawkins, the Kansas City sound lives on. Now, this Kansas City-based jazz and blues group, Ala Mode, builds upon that heritage and adds their own playful spin that is classic meets contemporary. So I have lead vocalist of Kansas City Jazz, Ala Mode, Jessica Powell, and Clayton DeLong, born in California, but he's here, and we love that about him. He's here, going to accompany and perform for us live. Welcome, my friends.
Hello. Thanks for having us, Maria.
Oh, you bet. It's so great to have you guys here. I want to tell our listeners that you performed for KKFI Underwriters Appreciation, and I was just spellbound. It's like this... And you'll hear for yourself this beautiful, powerful voice and this tiny young woman, and it's like it was magical.
That's right.
And your musicianship is just
thank
terrific.
You so much.
So, I'm going to talk to you also, and thank you for I believe you participated in our band auction.
We did.
Yeah. So
yes, we've done the band auction for many years.
Oh, good. Yeah, we thank you for that. So Clayton is currently the lead guitarist, and let's see, for the country rock band.
We have Ala Mode, which is our jazz group, and then we also have our country rock group called Rivertown.
Yeah, you're all over. We love that about you.
Yeah, so we are blessed to be able to play music full time. So,
and I'm going to tell listeners that your new CD is there, and I've got it in my hands. And
yes, Ala Mode just came out with our new CD. For sure.
And tell me about some of the songs that you have listed, because they're of a different era.
Yes, we chose, they're all standards on the album, no originals on this one. And we did a lot of Parisian jazz songs, some gypsy songs that we tailored to Ala Mode's unique instrumentation, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we have we typically play with a violinist. We have Marvin Gruenbaum from the Kansas City Symphony that we perform with, and we also perform with Adam Galblum, who is an amazing violinist here in Kansas City as well. And we've got upright bass on the album, clarinet. We have a spoons player on one of the tracks. Mike Begon played keys for us, two different bassists.
John Blagan on clarinet.
Yeah.
Steve Ragazzi, James Albright. Just powerhouses of the Kansas City jazz scene, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, again, as I mentioned, your voice and the music, what was the interest in jazz? Because you're so young, and I, you know, when I first saw you, I didn't really equate jazz and blues with, you know, a younger generation.
I grew up actually, I really liked more of the harder stuff, but then my friend showed me some Herbie Hancock and some Miles Davis. It just got me. I love the funky stuff. And then from there, I got into Wes Montgomery and listened to Pat Metheny, of course, mm-hmm. Kansas City mm-hmm. native. And just kind of really fell in love with jazz guitar.
Wow, terrific. Well, I'm going to quit yakking, and if you would do us the favor of performing live for us.
Oh, absolutely.
We'd be honored to. Since it's the first snow today, we decided to do a snowy song.
Thank you.
is snowing, the wind is blowing, but I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. I can't remember a worst December. That's why those icicles form. What do I care if icicles form? Off with my overcoat, off with my gloves. I need no overcoat. I'm burning with love. My heart's on fire. The flame grows higher, but I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm?
After the program's over, you're just going to hop in my car. We're just going to drive around, and you're going to perform in the back seat of my bug.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. Jessica, I want to say that you studied classical voice for 8 years and attended Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri.
I did,
Yeah.
I went to Stevens for musical theater, actually, and that is where I kind of found my calling to be a jazz singer.
Wow. Yes. And then ever since, you've performed at really some prestigious venues, right?
Yes, we have. We Clayton and I and a few other members of A La Mode, we perform for the, what is that called?
Celebration
at the Station every year. This last year, we had the honor of opening for the Kansas City Symphony. We had the American Air Force Band that opened for A La Mode last year. So that was pretty exciting stuff for us. We did New Year's Eve last year at Union Station with Dave Stevens, and we
just love performing, and
we're very lucky, yes.
Very lucky that we get to do this for our living. So we're definitely blessed.
Well, we're grateful for it. We really are. And I want to mention, Jessica, on your own, has performed at the Carnegie Hall.
I have. I did in high school, yes.
That's pretty awesome.
It was a very incredible experience. Yeah, one you never forget being on that stage for sure.
I bet. Also, Arrowhead Stadium, as you mentioned, the Plaza Art Fair, and so many more. And Clayton, I see that written here. After receiving guitar for Christmas at age 16, you immediately fell in love. But that's after you began playing the violin.
Yes, I started with violin, and essentially, I just was taking lessons and you know, trying to really hack away at the violin, but as soon as I picked up the guitar, it was just, I just knew that that was my instrument of choice, and I wasn't, I didn't shy away from it. You know, my friends would be playing video games and stuff like that, but I'd just be sitting there watching and playing guitar and practicing, and I fell in love with it. My first guitar teacher, J.U. Daly, helped me get into the conservatory and graduated with my jazz guitar major performance degree. And
I was here in
at the conservatory. Yeah. Yes, at UMKC, at the conservatory, great school. And then that's eventually where I started playing gigs around town and met Jess.
Yeah. But you also studied under Kansas City greats such as Rod Fleeman and Danny Embry.
Yes, Rod Fleeman, Danny
Bobby
Embry,
Watson.
Bobby Watson, of course, Douglas Neat, amazing classical guitarist. So I definitely have Kansas City's best behind me, for sure.
Well, you are Kansas City's best.
No.
AlamoJazz.com. Would you perform another song?
Certainly.
Your choice.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's do one off of the new album, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. How's about Zazu? All right. Okay, so this song was written about a group of hipsters in 1940s Paris, France, called the Zazus. They wore these big, giant zoot suits with huge shoulders, way, way out to the sides here, and green, red, and yellow plaid. And the girls wore the matching skirts. They were called the Zazus, and they had this very flamboyant style, and they danced to the hot jazz with their Lindy Hop style dancing. Yeah.
Very good.
The song's about them.
Comment que son verre par on se zater Zazou c'est vous plus mignon que la rose quand de ses vêtements ma Zazou oui c'est vous je vais pas faire ma vie à l'été musical ça ne semble plus je vais pas disparaître on ne va pas vas-y, fais ma raison. Oui, c'est
man, Man, you guys make me so happy. I'm serious.
That's what we try to do. You know?
Listen, I'm serious. I ain't got anything going on until 8 o'clock at night. So just come
here. That's right.
So tell me what your upcoming gigs are and where people can get more information about
We've
you.
We've got some exciting stuff coming up.
Terrific.
We do play every Monday night at the Tank Room, which is next door to Green Lady on 18th and Grand. We play there from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. with our swing dancers from 627 Stomp every Monday night.
We have all kinds of local musicians stop by, sit in. It's directly next door to the Green Lady Lounge.
Right.
And they all the players go there, so we're getting a lot of those coming over and jamming with us as well.
How fun
very,
is that?
Very cool.
What a
very
different flavor.
It is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One of our big exciting events this month coming up, we have a Roaring Twenties themed party that we're throwing at the Kill Devil Club on December 23rd. That's a Friday, and it's from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Kansas City's very first chorus line that's going to be performing with us, the Kansas City Canaries. So they dress up. They have the big sparkly matching costumes and headdresses, and it's going to be a really fun show.
We
perform that night with James Albright on upright bass.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've never been to the Kill Devil Club before, it is the perfect atmosphere for that speakeasy-themed kind of party. So it's going to be a really good time. We invite everybody to come.
Yeah, we play regularly at Chaz on the Plaza, obviously the Tank Room and the Kill Devil Club, but we're also at the Phoenix. Where else?
We perform at the Phoenix, Kill Devil, the American Restaurant. We're there on Friday. That's going to be our last performance at the American before they close.
Is it Saturday?
I think it is Saturday.
Oh, it might be Saturday. I apologize.
It's this Saturday from 6:30 to 10 o'clock. So
that's
our
right.
unfortunate last performance at a Kansas City Icon.
Before they close forever.
Well, even though they close, you continue. You go on.
We continue. You will absolutely be able to see all of them.
Now, that would be sad.
Yeah, we play all the time, so check us out.
So, again, I'm talking to Jessica Powell and Clayton DeLong of A La Mode Jazz. .com, and they are just a terrific group, as you've heard, heard them live.
Thank you. And
the funny thing is, a lot of times I think the expectation when someone performs live, it's like, it's not really going to sound, it has a different sound perhaps because you're in a different space, but no, it's just like the recording. So.
Thank you so much.
Now, for more information about your CDs, upcoming events and that.
Yes.
AlamodeJazz.com.
Yes. AlamodeJazz.com.
On Facebook or any other sort
Facebook,
of social media?
You can search the same Alamo Jazz, and our Facebook page will come up. We promote all of our shows on Facebook as well as on our website.
Yeah.
I just love this. Great.
Yes, absolutely. We love 90.1 and KKFI. You guys have always taken care of us. And
well, thank you.
Incredible
thank you.
To be on your show.
You know, when we have such a terrific creative community like this, we just want to share.
Absolutely.
Just want to get the word out because you guys are terrific.
Thank you so much
for coming in and talking with us and performing live. Before you go out, I want to ask you, what cut should I play from your CD?
Mm-hmm.
Which would, do you have a suggestion?
What do you think, Clayton? How about Digga Digga Do?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Let's give that a try.
Seventh one down.
Nine standards on the CD, all of our original arrangements on those, and three out of those songs are in French. This one's going to be in English.
And I think that's just so beautiful that you sing in French. It just makes it...
I try my best.
Really
I'm always learning. I'm not a native speaker. So.
Yes, we are definitely always learning.
Any native speakers out there, if you hear a mispronunciation, feel free to send me an email or a Facebook message.
Bless your heart. AlamodeJazz.com. Jessica Powell, Clayton DeLong, thank you so very much for coming in and making... our day.
Thank you
so much.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be right back with Arts Beat right after this. And you're tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd. A little husky voice today, but that's okay because we have Jordan Stempelman here in the studio live. And he is an American poet, and I got all this from Wikipedia, so you're somebody. He was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and Stempelman earned his B.A. in fiction from Columbia College in Chicago, where he won the Academy of American Poets, the Lenin Prize for Poetry. He's also has a Master of Fine Arts degree in poetry from the University of Iowa Writers Workshop, where he was a Leggett Shoups Fellow. He co-edits with poet Nicholas Manning of the Continental Review, one of the longest-running online literary magazines devoted to video poetics, and curates a Common Sense reading series. He is the author of 8 collections of poetry, including Wallop, which was published in 2015 by Magic Helicopter Press. Again, he lives in Kansas City, Missouri, and teaches at the Kansas City Art Institute, editor of the Continental Review. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you so much.
He's like, no, I can talk.
Yeah,
so great. I'm really happy to meet you.
I'm happy to meet you, too.
Very good. Now, you currently, I would say within the last couple of years, you were a resident of a Charlotte Street recipient? I'm just making things up now because that wasn't on Wikipedia. But
right. You could add it if you want.
Okay, I just did.
Yeah.
So Jordan, did you bring some work to read to us today?
I did. I brought it on my phone. I've got a copy of Wallop, I guess.
So
in the email archives.
What inspires you to write? What do you like to read?
I guess what I like to read and what I write are probably quite different.
Yeah.
In many ways, but I think the more I've gotten to know myself through writing, which I think that's why I started writing in the first place, was to have access to myself maybe a little bit more, I tend to explore, I think, the domestic. When I was younger, I explored language itself, which was just overwhelming, and not perhaps personal enough for me. So now, a lot of my poetry, I think, deals with day-to-day in the domestic and seeing into what we're most familiar with to see how unfamiliar we still are with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you, of course, again, you're at the Art Institute as a professor there in creative writing?
Creative writing, liberal arts. Uh-huh. So I'll teach creative writing courses. I'm teaching a class on death and dying in the spring. So all sorts of different.
Does something come out of that? Your position as a teacher at the Art Institute. I mean,
specifically with death and dying, or
well, yeah. I mean, I love the subject of death and dying because there's such beauty in death. It's that sort of resurrection.
No, I do too. Yeah, no, I think my practice as an educator is always influenced back into my writing. And that's one of the reasons I love to teach. I mean, the students themselves are so wonderful in challenging my reaction to a text, and then having that dialogue. So there's always something that comes. I taught a course in the long poem recently, which then got me to write something much longer than I'd been used to writing since I've had, 2 children, and I got into the habit of writing while they're napping, so the poems got a lot smaller.
And of course, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And as a person, goes through their life, there's so many different experiences that they encounter that really sort of shifts their writing, too.
I think it can. I don't know, though. I'm wondering now if we all, maybe not all of us, but from speaking only myself, that maybe there was one experience that I had that I'm trying to always return to in some sense. Or not the experience itself, but the feeling that was emitted from the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that was probably some complex experience that had a range of sensations and emotions behind it. But I wonder, if there's some original kind of potent experience that we, as artists, try to return to when we write or when we produce art.
Would you care to share a poem with us?
Sure, yeah. So this is from Wallop, the collection that came out a couple years ago with Magic Helicopter Press, and this is called For Us All. Over some thousands of years, we developed holes, dirt floors, awards, reprints, and prosecutions. I killed my children in caves. I left my child's pulled tooth on the marble counter. The policeman smell of coffee, bladder of dog, clenched homeowners outside the home. If I possessed my problem the way they possessed my problem. In my mother's house there's God. There's hearing about God. I am an athlete. I understand the anteater. I demonstrate this by drinking my drink through a straw in front of a line of policemen. I close my eyes as the anteater does. There are waterfalls. There is an uncertainty about my rectum. There's something sad. Where is the unsad, wise body? The strong, unroached crying. I will love people off. What happened is I killed something in the swamp. I thought of danger and I kicked something. I thought of what should be drained and I killed one meat of peach, one unfinished child. We are entirely out of our homes. I don't do my chores anymore. My black-haired wife is a wild turkey now, in this heavy branch tree with miles of feathers tucked around her. The policemen stand below, looking up, feathers. So many feathers come falling near their eyes. They are fed and washed and suited. They have the hands of newscasters. One by one, they run and return, run and return. In my car, I want to know everything. Outside my house, I want to know everything. There are no more homes. The year I wanted gold, I got gold. I loved my human being. I employed my child, and my child got panicky. The sound of rain was the sound of rain on mushrooms. Mothers ate brains. Fathers ate brains. I tried not to show my brains to my child. In my child's hotel room, we could hear the policemen hundreds of stories down on the street below. I thought we'd die before we'd speak. I took off my child's socks. I ate the toes. I ate the aloneness. I ate idiotic death regardless of death. I tasted a factory town. I ate the factory town. My black-haired wife did not want to talk. She began at what was natural. She hovered above the policeman and began with what's crude. All she ever remembered fell down. People traveled anyway. People ate from memory. She unbuttoned her throat, and more feathers came down. I am merely a celebration that trembles. Sometimes there's a human that measures me. The rain begins to fall, and we get rained on. I get measured in the rain. I sleep on my child in the rain. I set fires in the rain in the cities for the policemen who watch.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that.
Thank you.
Just beautiful. You know, Jordan, as I mentioned to our listeners, that you also are co-edit one of the longest-running online literary magazines devoted to video poetics.
Yeah, yeah. It's called the Continental Review, and it was actually started by Nicholas Manning, I think back in 2007, and he solicited me for a video, which at the time I was in graduate school, and I recorded it in the bathroom because it was the only place where my daughter was sleeping, and she wanders in at the end with her sleepy-eyed, and she climbs on top of me. But he asked me if I could kind of be the North American counterpart. He teaches at the Sorbonne, and so he was handling kind of the European side of poetics, and I came over on the American side, and we published some really wonderful work there. We there's a poet named Daniel Brzezinski who just won the National Book Award, and yeah, so we have a video by him up there and many other great poets.
Well, and you know, as you were reading that poem, I just have all these beautiful and maybe not so beautiful images, you know, in my mind, and I love when poetry does that.
Oh, I do too.
Takes you to that visual sort of place.
I do too. I think the image is one of the places where we can form commonality, a basis, and then some of the more difficult language-based material can attach and be explored.
So I know you're very busy as an educator, a father, poet, and all. What projects are you working on currently, or is something coming up that that you can tell our listeners?
Well, nothing really. I mean, I'm still writing, not as much as I as I was, but I've been working on these poems that I call cover songs, and I'm in a sense covering. It's interesting, you know, listening to the music and your own arrangements. I'm kind of doing that with my own work, my own arrangements of the surrealist poet Joyce Van Suhr and other poets, and then also trying to cover myself and change my own arrangements, which I don't know how successful I'll be, but that's what I'm trying to do. Cover
I love
myself.
That. For our listeners, where can they look at your work or read some of your work? Do you want to share a website or contact information with?
Well, I think there's a lot of places now online which are great. We can find.
Sure. Just Google your name.
Probably, yeah. God knows what you'll find.
I found you on Wikipedia, Mister.
Yeah, find my arrest records and all that. Everything is probably accessible online.
A Tumblr account.
There's a Tumblr account.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. You know, just if you would leave us with one final sort of.
I have a short poem. A really short one. That was a long one. So, like I said, I'm under the 14-line sonnet limit for most of my stuff. This is called After Turning 33. I gave away my VCR. I'm holding nothing like it right now. I have aspirations to look past how easily we can forget there's a window open. It's snowing. Mark Twain, barefoot. Mark Twain, snotty as he's ever been, heart heaving from the dust of comets, climbs into his first and last Ford. Health happens like this. There are stupid things we put in us. Some of these things go from stupid to nothing. A few never really leave.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jordan. Will you come back?
I'd love to come back. I'm right down the street.
Or you can hop in my car and we can ride around with Alamo because they're going to perform live.
That would be wonderful.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Very good. Read us some more work next time you come back.
Mm-hmm.
So, very good. And, I want to tell our listeners that next week, December 14th, so I'm still working on that for you, but I want to bring our good friend and staff volunteer of social media to the mic, Ben Payton. He's a volunteer just like everyone here at KKFI, and he's going to talk about the importance of social media, the marketing, the Twitter, the Face account, Instagram, and all that. So welcome, my friend, Ben.
Hi.
Very good. And you've been you've been busy working behind the scenes, just taking photographs and
tweeting and getting it out there. It's fun to be here in the studio while it's happening. And I think being able to document it in a visual aspect and share that with our followers, I think is interesting. And I think it's another way to engage our supporters and our followers and stuff.
Well, and not only is it important for us, but for the artistic community, the writers, the poets, the musicians, performers.
Right.
It's a really important venue for them, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the powers of these social networks is the network, right? Like, you build these bonds with all sorts of different people from all different walks of life. You might not meet these people otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
They may not normally, your circle might not intertwine with their circle, but online, you know, you're able to do that kind of stuff. And I think especially for like the individuals we had on through the hour, you know, it helps them expand their circles and find new people who are into what they're doing.
Yeah, I pulled this off the internet, that social media often feeds into the discovery of new content, such as new stories and discovery. And I think that's really important. For you, you use it constantly for the station, right?
Right, correct. Yeah. So I and some other individuals who... some volunteers and some staff are the people behind running the social media aspect for the station.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I recently volunteered to be part of this effort in the last month or so. So I think if a couple of things, we there's some new initiatives we want to take on and try and see what works on our, in our social media outlets. And on top of that, I would encourage our listeners and people who are either driving or listening to us online to reach out and interact with us and let us know what they think we can do better, what they would like to see more of at the station or online, because that's how we're going to improve.
Well, and it's important to us because we are a community radio, and so we're only reflecting, you know, what's out there in Kansas City, and it makes makes a difference to us, you know, that we represent different communities and groups and cultural organizations and that sort of thing. What is the importance of hashtag? I feel like Jerry Sutton. Yeah. What is the deal with the hashtags?
Yeah, so hashtags are just a way to sort of group together like pieces of information. So, you know, if, you know, a typical one on Twitter is whatever, the Throwback Thursday, right? You tag your post with that, with Throwback Thursday, hashtag Throwback Thursday, and you click on that, and online, the actual words Throwback Thursday on Twitter, it will pull up all the other posts that have that in it. So you can then, it's a way to group, you know, information, or some people do it for events, you know, like I know I've been to weddings where they've had hashtag Mary and Joe or 2016 or something, and you use that in your post, and then people can, you know, go back and see that.
Well, and I use hashtag Art Speak Radio and hashtag KKFI 90.1 or 91 FM without really knowing what it's going to do. I just throw it out there because everyone else does, and, you know, that's what I do. So, yeah. You know, thank you so much for documenting and sort of doing all of that, throwing all that information out there and
happy to
the airwaves for us. And thank you so much for the work that you do here at KKFI. We're, you know, we're community, we're volunteers, and we're all about the community, Kansas City community. I do want to remind listeners too that podcasts are available of the show. Our wonderful Simon Sharda, who is just a valuable member of the team here, usually gets those posted by Friday, and then folks can email them, post them to your websites and that sort of thing, and Facebook and all. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I also want to thank Boy Boy, Alamo, Jessica Powell, Clayton DeLong, Jordan Stempelman, and of course our dear friend Ben Payton. Next week, December 14th. It's December 14th, so there you go. Stay tuned next for Jeff Hirschberger, Jazz in the Afternoon. And I want to thank you all so much for listening, and like us on Facebook because I like you. And now, honey, I'm coming home.